From the Southeast Asian capital city of the Philippine Islands, Manila, typhoon ravaged Philippines, that would be, I welcome you to Coast AM, everybody. Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, whatever it may be, wherever you are, every single one of the time zones across the world covered one way or the other by this program, largest of its type in the world, Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell. Well, as you know, Typhoon Durian, which is a Durian, the name Durian is a nasty little fruit that grows here. Actually, it's quite good. They make candy out of it and so forth and so on. But durian is a fruit which grows a, it's kind of like a, how can I say this? It's got it's got long, protruding things coming from it that if it actually fell from a tree and hit you on the head, it would kill you. So it's a nasty fruit in a way. And it's probably a good name for a nasty typhoon. I saw durian coming long ahead of time, and I thought surely here in Manila we were doomed. They had the eye of durian coming right over Manila, and so we were all preparing this time for the worst, truly the worst. We thought that was it. And I thought, you know, if these kind of winds hit the capital city here, it's going to just be, there's not going to be anything left. And for several days, the track remained showing it going right over downtown Manila, you know, right over Makati. It just would have been horrible. Then at the very last moment, the eye took a slight jog to the south. And when I say the last moment, I really mean the last moment. It took a slight jog to the south. And of course, the results are now known of that. We still got hit hard here. But to the south of us, it was awful. The ash and the boulders that had been building up since an eruption in July, high on the slopes of the Mayan volcano, let go. Typhoon Durian's blasts of wind and drenching rain raked it all down in deadly black walls of debris. For nearly 3 hours, the typhoon on Thursday afternoon, mudslides ripped through the Mayan gullies, uprooting trees, flattening homes, engulfing people, entire hamlets simply swamped, gone in Mayan on northern Luzon Island. About 300 people are now known to be dead, most of them in the mudslides on Mayan. 300 are missing. So 300 dead, 300 missing. That is obviously not a final death toll. What I do have there comes from the National Office of Civil Defense. With power and phone lines down, it took until Friday morning when the very first flights managed to survey the area, looking for the scope of the devastation to emerge, and it did. The disaster covered almost every corner of the province, rampaging floods, falling trees, damaged homes. It all happened in Albay, the governor of Albay province. Accounted for all but a few of the deaths. Pope Benedict, saddened by the tragic loss of life, was praying for the victims, rescue workers, and others providing assistance, the Vatican said. Our rescue teams are overstretched, rescuing people on rooftops. That sounds familiar, doesn't it? According to the civil defense head, after officials briefed President Arroyo on the disaster and the difficulty of getting two survivors stranded by seas of black mud, they call it a black desert, bodies wrapped in blankets, slung on bamboo poles to be carried to trucks, then covered with coconut leaves and transferred to makeshift morgues. It's just terrible. We now call this place a black desert. The mayor of Albay said that. He said that three of the five communities comprising the village of 1,400 people had been, quote, wiped out, with only the roofs of several houses jutting out of the debris, if you can imagine that. He said people claimed some of the boulders were as big as cars and red hot, suggesting fresh lava, perhaps, from the 8,077-foot Mayan. His own residence, that of the mayor, is actually... had water that rose higher than a person's head in a flash flood. He said, I thought I was a goner. That's the mayor of the town. So a real disaster here in the Philippines. There's a lot going on here in the Philippines. I'll fill you in on some more of it in just a moment. Let's go ahead and take our break, and then we'll look at more news and some national news. Stay right where you are. I saw quite a bit of the coverage, the U.S. coverage on Fox and CNN of the events here in the Philippines, so I know that a lot of you are aware of what happened. I'm hearing from a lot of families in the U.S., families who have families in the Albay area, and two items. I'm unable, and I'm really sorry, but I'm unable to act as the Red Cross and get you any information at all on your families. I don't have any communication to that area. As you all know, I had an antenna up, had, past tense. The building consulted with its attorneys, and in a hurry with the typhoon bearing down on us, the antenna was taken down. So I don't have an antenna up anymore. If I want to get one, I am going to have to find a house, something that I'm giving considerable thought to right now. But my antenna's not up, so I'm very, very sorry. I cannot report on anybody's relatives or loved ones in the Albay area. Just know it's bad, and two of the three villages are simply wiped out. That's all there is to it. And that was a result of the southern little tiny turn. If you look at the track of Durian, you can see at the very, just, I mean, at the last moment, but when it was headed, the eye was headed straight for us. At the very last moment, it took a tiny little jog. Now, maybe that was some of you with mass concentration. I have no idea. If it was, thank you. But look what happened to the south of us. I did not request that anybody do that. I know there were some who went ahead and did it anyway. I still feel that toying with Mother Nature is not a good idea, and I don't know that really occurred, but I do know there were some people doing that. So thank you, but it may have had unintended consequences. Again, I certainly did not request it, even on my own behalf or that of my family. Now, the webcam photograph tonight. It's going to take a little bit of explanation. Ladies and gentlemen, meet Dolly. Now, there's a fair story that goes along with this. As you know, I brought Yeti and Abby all the way from the U.S. To here in the Philippines with me. And here in the little area in which we live, we have a number of restaurants that we visit regularly every day, you know, for lunch or dinner or whatever. And every time we walk, we go to the restaurants, we walk, and every time we'd go, here would be this bouncing little kitten, this beautiful, poor little kitten. I guess I need to back up a little bit. Most Philippine cats, particularly, you know, the ones here in the cities, are very leery, weary of people that don't treat them nicely, and so they tend to scratch and bite, and you stay away from them. In fact, pretty much all Filipino people who come here are afraid to even touch my cats. I tell them, no, you know, they won't bother you. But they don't believe that, and for a good reason, because most of the ones out there in a self-protective mode scratch and bite. So naturally, they're very leery to get anywhere near. Now, this little tyke doesn't scratch, doesn't bite. And about 2 weeks ago, I finally, Erin couldn't take it anymore either. We picked her up and we brought her here to the, this was 2 weeks ago, brought her to the condo, gave her a bath, fed her, sat down and said, you know, we just can't do this. We can't have three cats in a condo. And so we ended up, after feeding her and bathing her, we took her back. And then every day she would be there to greet us, rub up against our ankles, do little turns and twists, you know, like she was so happy to see us, a little girl. And so, day before yesterday, she did the normal. It was just too much. There was just no way. Aaron said, no, we've got to take her. So, once again, I carried her in. The guards outside our building got a good chuckle out of it. Just big chuckle. They thought it was the funniest thing they ever saw, me carrying this little tiny thing. She's really quite small. And I don't know if you can tell from the picture or not, but she's quite small. And the little marks she's got on her nose are not lesions or anything. They're just, she's been in some fights with other cats, and so she's got some little cuts on her nose. You know, it's a rough life out there for a Philippine cat. It's got to fight for daily survival. Well, so the bottom line here is we have another cat, number three here in the condo. Too many, obviously, for a condo, but what are you going to do? So yesterday, we took her to the vet. She got her shots. We will proceed. We'll be back to the vet in another couple of weeks and gave her another bath, and now she is firmly convinced that I, not Aaron, but I am her mother. And she sleeps with me in my armpit, covering my neck, around my head, attacking my feet. And needless to say, at first, Abby and Yeti hated her guts. Then Abby decided she was all right, and, they play like crazy now. Yeti has not yet forgiven me, nor anybody else, having anything to do with this, for bringing this cat, this little tiny thing into the house. And Yeti is really ticked off. I mean, he is ticked off. Now, it's become somewhat better in the last 12 hours or so, and we'll see how he does. But Dolly is now here to stay. So there you go, folks. Once a sucker for cats, always a sucker. I guess there's no way out of it. There's just no way out of it. That's all there is. I'm just a sucker for cats. I just couldn't stand it. Aaron couldn't stand it. We'd walk by and she'd say, "Where's your cat?" And boy, this little thing had come bounding every day right up to us, and we just caved in finally. All right, enough. Let's look at the world news. President Bush said Saturday that he wants to hear all advice before making any decisions about any changes at all in Iraq, the strategy there, even as it was disclosed that apparently Donald Rumsfeld called for major changes in tactics just 2 days before he resigned as defense secretary. I wonder if that had anything to do with it. He said, quote, "In my view, it is time for a major adjustment." That's a November 6th memo to the White House, and maybe the adjustment was that he was out. Anyway, clearly what the U.S. forces are currently doing in Iraq is not working well enough or fast enough. That's a continued quote from Rumsfeld. Pfizer, Inc. said Saturday that it has cut off all clinical trials and development for a new cholesterol drug that was supposed to be the star of its pipeline because of an unexpected number of deaths and cardiovascular problems in patients who used it. The world's largest drug maker said that it was told Saturday that an independent board monitoring a study for the drug that raises levels of HDL, what's commonly known as good cholesterol, recommended that the work end because of, quote, "an imbalance of mortality and cardiovascular events," end quote. Good reason. A triple car bombing struck a food market in a predominantly Shiite area in central Baghdad Saturday, killing at least 51 people just a day after a U.S.-Iraqi raid against Sunni insurgents in a nearby neighborhood. Three parked cars blew up just about exactly the same time in a very busy district where people were shopping for vegetables and so forth. Remember the man gunned down in a spray of 50 police bullets on his wedding day? He was buried Saturday as hundreds of angry demonstrators honored him with a moment of silence before going jaw to jaw with police in a bitter confrontation outside a Queens precinct house. The demonstrators taunted police, standing just inches away from a row of officers and daring the police to lay a hand on them. Some in the crowd held signs reading "Death to the Pigs" and "Shoot Back." Castro did not show up at his 80th birthday celebration. They had actually put that off so that he might be part of it, and he's not. So it's beginning to look as though he's sort of permanently missing. Utility crews worked overtime Saturday, bad weather, I guess, to restore electrical service to thousands of customers still blacked out by the Midwest's first big snowstorm of the season. As temperatures plummeted below freezing in the storm's aftermath, officials said some people could be without power for days. Missouri National Guard teams are going door to door in the St. Louis area to make sure residents were surviving the cold. Hard to imagine that from here in the tropics. The widow of a soldier killed in Afghanistan saw a Wiccan symbol placed on a memorial plaque for her husband Saturday. After fighting the federal government for more than a year over the emblem, Roberta Stewart, widow of Sergeant Patrick Stewart, and Wiccan leader, said it was the first government-issued memorial plaque with a Wiccan pentacle. That's amazing. A five-pointed star enclosed in a circle more than 50 friends and family dedicated the plaque at Northern Nevada Veterans Cemetery, about 30 miles east of Reno. Also, as if there's not enough going on here in the Philippines, just to the south of us, south of Manila, just a little bit, Taal Volcano, that's T-A-A-L. I've been to the Taal Volcano now a couple of times. Known as the world's smallest active volcano, has recently formed a new geyser emitting from the volcano's vent on Crater Island. The Philippine Institute of Volcanology and Seismology says a full-scale eruption, not expected, but placed the volcano on an alert level 1 or low-level unrest, urging visitors to keep a safe distance from the danger zone. Additional seismographs were installed to monitor water levels, temperature, water chemistry in the volcano. Several unique features have made a picture postcard Taal Volcano a premier tourist attraction. It really is. Most notably, a Taal Volcano is an island on a lake which exists within a larger island, which is in itself surrounded by a lake about 30 miles south of Manila in Luzon, an island itself. Which makes this volcano even more novel is the fact the volcano contains a lake of its own within its crater, known as, of course, Crater Lake. Now, I have been to this volcano now twice. There is an area above it that I'm very much in love with. There's a ridge looking down on the volcano. And it's about 2,500 feet in elevation, which makes Tegete a home to a lot of very fine resorts, hotels, vacation homes. It's a beautiful area. As I mentioned, I've been there actually three times now. I looked at some homes there. I'm also looking in the Baguio area. Baguio's up at about 7,000 feet, average temperature about 68 degrees. So I'm looking there, too. And so now we have a volcano on alert just to the south of Manila. It's obvious to me that the typhoons that we have experienced, one after another this year in the Pacific, are what has prevented, essentially, a repeat of the hurricane year that the U.S. Eastern Seaboard had the previous year. Now, I'm concerned that next year may be a reverse of the whole situation. Our weather is worsening. There's no question about it. Storms are getting worse. Now, the fact that the U.S. Eastern Seaboard escaped for 1 year doesn't mean a damn thing. I know that the people there are very glad that they didn't have a whole series of very bad hurricanes this year, but we did. On the other side of the world, we did. Well, weather patterns will shift, and then, of course, the large storms will return to the U.S. East Coast, and it's going to go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, just like that. So don't rest easily because it was a good year. It's going to be a bad year, and we're going to get increasingly bad years, ladies and gentlemen. That's all there is to it. The apocalypse has a new date. Cheery little news, 2048. I sort of read this to you a while ago, but it's an update on that story. 2048 is a date when the world's oceans will be completely, I say again, completely empty of fish. This is all being predicted by an international team of ecologists and economists. The cause, the disappearance of species due to overfishing, pollution, habitat loss, climate change. The study is by Boris Warm, PhD, of Halifax, Nova Scotia, with colleagues in the UK, US, Sweden, and Panama. It was an effort to understand what this loss of ocean species might mean to the world. It's a long story. I'm not going to have time to go into it all right now. But this is a story we're going to begin to track very closely. Because I can assure you, if all the world's oceans are devoid, completely devoid of any life, any fish, how far behind can we be? I'm Art Bell. Indeed so. I will read to you more about this threat to the world's oceans. We'll get into more of that tomorrow night. But can you imagine? I mean, in 50 years, all the fish gone. That's not tenable. I don't think we can survive on a planet where that occurs to the world's oceans. I just don't think we can. And I've got a number of other stories that are very apocalyptic, and I don't particularly enjoy reading those stories to you, but there's more and more of them. They cannot be denied, especially something like this. God, no more fish. At any rate, we're going to go to open line. So anything you want to talk about is absolutely fair game. Those were the portholes to come and visit with us over the next 30 minutes or so. Then at the top of the hour, we're going to talk to a sort of Indiana Jones of the animal world, a man who went searching for dinosaurs, and we'll find out what he found, you know, kind of the lost world scenario, only for real with this man. Peter von Puttkamer is his name, and he really, he's putting together a documentary, actually, of, I guess, what we will call the real lost world. At any rate, all of you and whatever you want to talk about coming right up. By the way, one more thing about Dolly. An amazing thing as far as I'm concerned. Dolly would appear to be probably about 5 months old, 4 to 5 months old. And that's the vet's guess. And when we brought her back, we had installed, we have sort of a maid's quarters out there. Not that we have a maid, but we have a maid's quarters, you know, with a CR. That's comfort room. Americans say bathroom, we say comfort room over here. And we had a little swinging door installed and put the cat box out there in the maid's quarters, minus the maid, of course, she's not here. And, of course, Abby and Yeti, who are very used to using it, immediately determined how to use the door and went in and have never made any mistake. But Dolly, I thought, oh, we're going to have a problem here, because she's been an outside cat, used to doing it anywhere. Well, we brought her in the house, and so, concerned about that, I taught her about the door. I kind of pushed her through the little door, you know, and amazingly, she loved it. She liked the door idea, I guess, because she went back and forth, in and out, had to have gone 10 times in and out of that door, teaching herself how to push the little door until she went through. So she actually taught herself to use the little door. Now, she has not made one mistake. Every single one of the little cat-to-dos has gone exactly where it belongs, in the box. So she's obviously a pretty bright little cat to have learned the door and learned the box all in one fell swoop without one mistake yet. And if there hasn't been, there probably will not be. So that is the story to date of Dolly the cat, who absolutely thinks that I am her mother. And she treats me that way. I woke up in the middle of the night tonight. She was licking and chewing on my eyelashes. That's an experience. And then I had a dream that that sharks were eating my feet. And I'm convinced she had something to do with that as well. All right, here we go. Let's go to the first-time caller line. How about that? Spencer in Fairfield, California.
All right, baby, what's going on?
Well, a lot.
I bet. How are you enjoying that island weather out there?
Well, the normal weather here is hot and humid.
Hey.
It's a lot like Florida, actually.
I bet. Hey, long-time listener, first-time caller. I wanted to relate a story that about an experience I had cruising back on the 580 corridor heading into San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
I live out in the East Bay of California, and, you know, we have the Concord's weapon station out here. We have Lawrence Livermore Labs.
Sure.
Well, about 2 years ago, I was heading out 580, and I decided to cut across some farm roads through the Diablo mountain range out by Vasco Road and whatnot. And it must have been just my luck and, you know, one of those, you know, divine intervention things. But as I was cruising along, you know, and this is like 10:30 at night, I'm looking up at the stars, and all of a sudden the stars black out.
Uh-huh.
And honest to God, Art, I saw one of those black triangles that people have been talking about.
Yes. There's been, I guess there was some recent, a guest on Coast or something, described the black triangle as a blimp or something akin to some high-tech blimp. I don't think so. I really don't think so. Rolling over a million times as I have, what I observed with Ramona back when we saw it, that was no blimp. There's no way that was a blimp.
Oh, this thing was not a blimp either, Art. This thing, where I was along the road, there were some eucalyptus trees, some fairly tall eucalyptus trees, and this thing was just above them. And, I mean, it had to have been no bigger than a really, really good-sized RV in length. But there were no bright lights on it. The only light that I saw were maybe these small little red pinhole running lights.
Was it completely silent?
Completely silent. In fact,
would you describe it as floating and or defying gravity, but not flying, not having speed to aerodynamically navigate the sky?
No. Well, this thing seemed pretty intent on where it was going.
What I mean is, was it going so slowly that it wasn't flying? I mean, traditionally, planes have to go fast enough to have lift.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
No, this thing was cruising rather slow, and it wasn't a blimp either. Just so low, and the moonlight at that night, it was in October, was really well. And again, this is off from the highway in the hills, going into like the San Ramon area of California, and you know, there's a lot of canyons out there. But this thing was flying real low. It crosses over from my right to my left over these trees, and mm-hmm. after it crosses over this road, there's just some, you know, some cattle farms right out there, just a bunch of grazing land and some small foothills. But this thing comes over, and it's just kissing over these foothills, Art, and it looks like it's doing like a platter effect. It's not rising vertically at once, but like almost like kind of fishtailing over these little hills.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to keep up with it, but it was going a little faster than, say, 70 miles an hour.
Ah, okay. Well, that's still entirely too slow for it to have been aerodynamically navigating the sky. It wasn't doing that. The one I saw was going considerably slower than that, and to this very day, I will laugh, and I'll forever laugh at what the Air Force said about it all. Our newspaper, you know, I wasn't the only one. Ramona and myself were not the only ones who saw this thing. It was reported widely, and, you know, so Nellis Air Force Base had to say something. I've said this before on the air. Their response in the next week's paper was, yes, we admit there was a secret mission that may have overflown the Pahrump Valley, they said. It was a C-130, they said. Ha, ha, ha. What an insult. Anybody who's ever been around aircraft knows aircraft at all. A C-130 at 150 feet above your head would rattle your teeth as it flew over. This was no C-130 or any even far distant relative of a C-130. So I thought they had real guts to say something like that. I mean, that's embarrassing as far as I'm concerned. A silent triangle goes over your head, floating, defying gravity, giant triangle. You watch it head out over toward Area 51, and the Air Force says it was a C-130. Oh, please. First time caller, make that wild card line. Paul in Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Art. It's Paul from Greendale.
Yes, sir.
I was in the Air Force in the C-130. I mean, just from that last caller, that's a propeller plane that...
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's... hard to compare that to a silent triangle.
That's an insult.
Totally.
Yeah.
But anyway, question was, back probably like 3 or 4 years ago, you had some folks on that were describing a black, like, pyramid, not pyramid, but like, they had an alien in the ice chest. Remember those guys?
Oh, yes, of course.
And I think that the Want to Take a Ride actually came from that.
Jonathan Reed.
Yeah, whatever happened. I mean, I never heard, and I apologize if this, you know, had been debunked or whatever, but whatever happened to those guys? I mean, I know.
Well, there's a lot. Look, a lot of debunking went on. People claim to have seen people working in jobs and all kinds of things. But as far as I'm concerned, it's still, as they say, in my gray box. There's not one thing that has not been debunked. I mean, look at Roswell. Look at anything, really, that you want to talk about. You know, if the debunkers want to go to work on something like that, they can absolutely ruin it.
Yeah, that was an outstanding story, though. I mean, the dog that I think imploded into another dimension. And
yeah, it was either a great story or it was real. It was either a great story or real. Either way, it was fun.
Yep. All right.
Okay, thank you very much. I approached it absolutely honestly. And so if it was fake, if it was somebody's made-up story, it was a damn good one. But I can assure you that I approached it honestly at the time. And, yes, the debunkers went to work on that. The debunkers went to work on Mel's Hole. The debunkers have gone to work on. In fact, on every major story that we have reported, the debunkers take it as their personal job to find holes, make holes, or otherwise just say it cannot be. Let's go to Steve on West of the Rockies Line in California.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
I want to commend you and thank you so much for taking little Dolly into your life.
Oh, thank you.
The lottery.
Well, she did.
If only all little creatures could be so lucky. I take care of 20 to 30 cats, possums, skunks, you name it.
You must have a lot of space.
Well, I live in the country, and it's on my front porch. They have food. They have water. I do what I can for them.
Good for you.
And my heart breaks. I've seen so many tragedies, as you might imagine, but I do the best I can do. So I really want to thank you so much. You're truly a wonderful and magnificent individual.
Well,
I have a question for you.
Sure.
That has nothing to do with that.
Sure.
The rocket guy. The guy who was going to launch himself, the guy who made his money, I think, inventing Legos, and then he got married. Remember him?
Yeah. I have not heard back from him. I don't know. You're right. He was going to launch himself. Well, then she was a wise woman. I had some negative vibes about that. I
just never heard anything more about it. And, he was quite interesting.
He absolutely was. And again, I'm sorry, I've heard nothing further, which obviously means that that he did not launch himself, because had he done so, even in partial success or spectacular failure, either way, we would have heard about it. So probably somebody talked him out of it. Well, as far as cats are concerned, I'm hopeless. And Aaron is also hopeless. We're just both hopeless. And Ramona was hopeless in that category, too. And that just, it's one of those things. And so here I began with two cats here in the Philippines. By the way, their passage for them to come from America to the Philippines cost more than my ticket. A lot more. In fact, almost double. Ridiculous. At any rate, now there are three, and you'll be able to see Dolly. I'll leave Dolly up over the weekend, but she is a total sweetheart. And we've just got to do more for animals in this world. I've said this before, and I'll say it again. I don't see a great difference between animals and humans, except we can talk. Otherwise, though, they have all the emotions we have. Oh, Lord, they have every single emotion. Jealousy, anger, joy, happiness, just everything that a human expresses, and we do it vocally, they also have. If you look at them, you cannot not know that. So the way we treat animals in this world has got to be rethought, substantially rethought, in my opinion. We've got to rethink it. That's all there is to it. Let's go to the second wildcard line. JC, calling himself JC in Florida, not the JC. Oh, okay.
Hey, Art, how are you?
Quite well.
Wonderful. Hey, congratulations on Dolly. That's very passionate of you. But, it's amazing how an animal can come to your life, a creature, a living creature, and expand the compassion.
I mean, there are limits. I mean, you walk every night, and every night this little thing runs up to you like, oh, my savior, oh, mommy, oh, daddy, take me, take me, take me. You can't take that night after night. You just can't.
Well, I'm glad you survived the hurricane, and I don't get to listen as often as I'd like to, but I'm traveling right now, and I was listening in the beginning of your show, and you were... there's a little news brief you were discussing about something about in New York, the fellow that was shot, I guess murdered, essentially, by on his wedding day. And then this angry mob of, or not angry mob.
No, it was an angry mob. That's a fair comment.
I hate to say that because it seems that this, it's becoming more of a, you know, police state. And as the people, and New Yorkers are great examples of when we, the people, are really fed up, starting in
Maybe you can help me out with something. I am not clear. The original incident where the 50 bullets were fired, I know there was a collision, maybe a couple of collisions with police vehicles, but I'm still not clear on why they opened fire. Are you?
No, this was the first I've heard of it, and I know that stories like this do not get mentioned in cities like Dallas, where I live. It's, you know, it's very Viacom Clear Channel, and, you know, pretty much has monopoly on all the news in Dallas. And so we don't normally hear this. And
well, it's not Clear Channel keeping the news from you. I haven't heard it either. I mean, I read every news service there is. I'm looking for information. Did they suspect it was an attempt at vehicular homicide? Is that why they opened fire? I haven't heard anything like that. So I just don't understand why.
Well, the aggressive nature of the police these days, it's just out of control. And I don't know either what happened. I'm not really sure of the details, but I am a first-time caller, and normally I don't like to get into subjects like this, but I was just kind of wondering what was going on with the situation, because, you know, as far as New Yorkers all standing together.
People are actually quite angry. Listen, thank you very much. I people are angry, and they have a right to be angry about this, I guess. But again, I don't know what prompted them to open fire. Now, normally, a couple of collisions would not be enough to do that, unless the police thought that he was attempting vehicular homicide, trying to kill police officers, with a collision. If they thought that, then that would, of course, cause them to open fire. They would be responding in self-defense. But I really haven't heard what the police say prompted them to open fire. And if anybody out there has heard, I would appreciate that information. I guess all of this is still yet to unwind. Strange stuff. Very strange stuff. We now hear about the fact that it occurred. We hear about the burial. We hear about the confrontation with police. But we still don't really know what caused them to open fire. Well, from the typhoon-ravaged Philippines, I'm Art Bell, alive, and we shall just keep on trucking. Stay right where you are.